This is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. When you're feeling like ice cream, have you ever pulled into the McDonald's drive-thru only to be told that their ice cream machine is down? It's happening so often, it's become a joke on social media. Someone on the app TikTok even made a song about the frequency with which McDonald's ice cream machines seem to be out of order.
Welcome to McDonald's, what you order, bro?
Can I get an Oreo McFlurry, yeah?
We're not serving ice cream right now. It's broken at the moment. Can I get you something?
Oh, I know you're gonna say that.
McDonald's, of course, is an Illinois-based corporation, and we're joined now by someone who's been investigating the phenomena of the broken McDonald's ice cream machines, which are actually made by another Illinois company based in Rockton. I recorded this conversation with Andy Greenberg earlier this month. He's a senior writer for Wired, covering security, privacy, and information freedom. He's also the author of the book Sandworm, A New Era of Cyber War and the Hunt for the Kremlin's Most Dangerous Hackers. Because we recorded this conversation ahead of time, we're not taking calls for this segment, but we do always want to hear what you thought. You can email us. The address is talk@21stshow.org. That's talk@21stshow.org. You can also leave us a voicemail, tweet us. You can find all the information about all the ways to contact us at our website, 21stshow.org. All right, here now is my conversation with Andy Greenberg of Wired. Andy Greenberg, welcome to the 21st. Thanks for being here.
Very glad to be here. Thank you.
So can you begin by telling us a bit about the reputation that ice cream machines at McDonald's have?
Well, I can't say that I was aware of this until I started working on this story, but it turns out that McDonald's ice cream machines are just always seemingly broken. I mean, they are only, I would say, broken on average, like one out of eight or one out of six times, statistically speaking, but it kind of has come to feel for McDonald's customers like they're just broken all the time. Like if you go to a McDonald's, it just seems like the ice cream machine never works. I just checked the stats and it's currently one out of nine times, basically in McDonald's nationwide, according to the website mcbroken.com. But this is enough for, you know, broken ice cream machines at McDonald's to have become a kind of meme almost. Like it's this thing that people discuss on social media, and it's almost become like a representation of like everything wrong with technology and capitalism.
So I just to make sure I understand, one in nine. So if you go to nine McDonald's, it's likely that one of them will have a broken ice cream machine at any given moment.
Yeah, nationwide, that's true. But in San Diego, for instance, 31% of McDonald's ice cream machines are broken right now. In Washington, D.C., the number is 23% almost. In New York, it's more than 22%. I mean, these are enormous numbers in major cities. So, you know, for certain McDonald's customers, it probably feels like every machine around you is broken.
Yeah. Okay. These machines, they're made by a company called Taylor, which is based here in Illinois in Rockton, which is near Rockford in the Wisconsin border. Do they have an exclusive contract with McDonald's or something? Why? I mean, is this happening at other fast food restaurants, or is this something that's exclusive to McDonald's?
Well, McDonald's is very controlling about what its franchisees buy in terms of equipment. Taylor doesn't have a totally exclusive arrangement. If you own a McDonald's franchise, then you actually have a choice between two ice cream machines, the Taylor machine and a special Taylor machine that Taylor has designed for McDonald's, or this other one sold by this Italian company called Carpigiani. But that Carpigiani machine, it's a lot harder to fix when it breaks because you have to order parts from Italy. And so very, very few McDonald's franchisees actually buy that one. I think I think Taylor has something like a 90% market share, at least among McDonald's, as well as, you know, Taylor sells ice cream machines to practically every other fast food chain you've ever heard of, like Wendy's, Dairy Queen, really, you know, In-N-Out, everyone. But then that this one machine that they've made specially for McDonald's, it turns out that it actually is more complex, more powerful in some ways, but also broken much more often than the machine that it makes even for these other fast food chains.
Oh, that's so interesting. So it is something that's unique to the McDonald's situation. All right. So how does this go from an internet meme to something that you decide to, you know, sort of take seriously is an investigation, right? I mean, there are people out there who are thinking like, maybe there's something behind this, you know, something intentional on the part of the company making these machines.
Right. Well, you know, I certainly didn't wake up one day and just think like, oh, I should investigate this. I haven't been into a McDonald's in, I don't know, a decade. But I was approached by this guy, Jeremy O'Sullivan, who just like, and the way that I get tips from like a lot of people who have, I cover cybersecurity and surveillance and things, and I get a lot of these sort of crazy tips about conspiracy theories. But Jeremy approached me and told me that he had information about why McDonald's ice cream machines were broken, this secret code that these Taylor ice cream machines used, that even McDonald's franchisees did not know about, that Taylor uses to lock out even the owners of these restaurants from accessing the machines that they buy. And then I was kind of hooked by this and began to talk to Jeremy in more detail. And it turns out Jeremy has this startup that sells a little device that is basically used by McDonald's restaurant owners to hack their ice cream machines. You put this little box called a kitch, a little like computer essentially, into your ice cream machine, and it intercepts all of the communications in the ice cream machine and relays them out like a kind of spy bug to an internet interface. So you can monitor all of this data about the ice cream machines and really prevent them from failing. You can kind of see things going wrong in the machine and fix something before it becomes a problem, or you can see why the machine has broken and fix it yourself very quickly rather than have to call out the official repairman from the Taylor distributor, which often costs, you know, these restaurant owners hundreds or thousands of dollars a month.
Is there something illicit, about franchisees that are using this technology, or are they running afoul of the rules in some way? Or
it doesn't seem like it. You know, okay. It didn't seem like it to me. And in fact, it seems like McDonald's should be quite happy about this new tool that keeps these ice cream machines online much more often. And I began speaking after talking to Jeremy to a bunch of franchisees who have used this little device called Kitch, who have hacked their ice cream machines, basically. And they're really happy with this device. And they find that it does keep their ice cream machines from breaking. But it turns out that this kind of started as I wrote in the article, a cold war between this tiny company called Kitch and Taylor, which makes these ice cream machines, and McDonald's, who have taken the side of Taylor and really attempted, I think you could say, to destroy this tiny little startup that was trying to fix their ice cream machines.
Okay, so what is McDonald's incentive here? It has these machines that are breaking all the time. Why wouldn't it want its franchisees selling more ice cream?
It's a really good question, and I don't entirely know the answer, but it's what it seems like on the surface is Kitch and Taylor are kind of in a conflict here. You know, Taylor doesn't like anybody reverse engineering and messing with their machines. They want, in fact, to sell a new machine that does a lot of the same things that Kitch does, that they've been working on for years, but still haven't really put out publicly, that will have internet connectivity and hopefully won't break as often. So they want the opportunity to sell their own fix for this. And McDonald's had to choose between, you know, a kind of unknown startup that's trying to fix their ice cream machines and the ice cream machine maker itself, who keeps promising that they're going to fix it. And they chose, you know, I guess unsurprisingly in some ways, the big company, their longtime equipment partner, you know, their fellow Illinois company that they have worked with for many decades, instead of this little startup that they've never heard of, despite the fact that the startup is the one that has actually fixed this problem, whereas the ice cream machine giant, Taylor, can't seem to fix it.
Let me take a moment to reintroduce you. Listeners, if you're just tuning in, this is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey, and we're talking about broken McDonald's ice cream machines. This has become a meme. You can go on McBroken to find out where ice cream machines are not working in your particular area. We were discussing earlier Almost a third of the machines in San Diego right now are not working nationwide. It's about 1 in 9 of these machines, but it happens often enough for McDonald's customers that it sort of became an internet meme. These machines, McDonald's, of course, is an Illinois-based corporation. These machines are made by a company called Taylor, which is also based in Illinois, in Rockton. And we're speaking about this with Andy Greenberg, who is a senior writer for Wired, covering security, privacy, information freedom. He's also the author of the book Sandworm, A New Era of Cyber War and the Hunt for the Kremlin's Most Dangerous Hackers. So, Andy, we were talking about McDonald's incentives in working with Taylor. Maybe it's self-evident, but how is Taylor benefiting from its machines being broken, potentially?
Well, that is a very fair question with a kind of a complicated answer. So Taylor has all these approved distributors all over the country and in the world, in fact. And those distributors have maintenance contracts with many of the owners of these ice cream machines. And every time that the owners in these restaurants, McDonald's restaurants around the country, call out a repairman, those distributors make money, but they also pay a fee back to Taylor. So Taylor does make money from these ice cream machines being broken all the time, because a big part of their revenues, is a significant fraction of the money they make in general, comes from maintenance, not from selling the machines in the first place. So, you know, Kitsch, this little tiny startup, their central motivation is to make their product work and to make the ice cream machines work. Taylor's is not necessarily to keep the machines working. It's to keep those maintenance contracts going, to keep the repair revenue flowing.
Have you heard anything from Taylor or McDonald's about this, you know, this meme, this idea that their machines are always broken and that maybe there's some incentive that they have for these machines breaking down on and getting these repair contracts out there?
Taylor has certainly never admitted that they, you know, that they want these machines to be broken. And I'm not, you know, who knows what they really think internally, although they're clearly, like, I'm sure that they feel a kind of addiction to that repair revenue stream. But, you know, they say instead that Kitsch's device is dangerous, that it violates the privacy of the data in these ice cream machines, which they claim that it violates the privacy of the data in the ice cream machines, which they claim belongs to them, Taylor, not even to the restaurant owners. McDonald's, you would think, would want to kill this, like, this meme that their ice cream machines are broken all the time. And they seem very aware of that. And they even kind of admitted to it when I emailed with a spokesperson about this. But it seems like they have sided with Taylor, and they made the same arguments that Kitsch is a dangerous device, that it voids your ice cream machines warranties, that it's dangerous for staff if they, you know, somebody could, like, remotely turn on an ice cream machine while somebody was put their hand in it, which seems a little far-fetched, because, you know, officially in the manual, when you're repairing these machines, you should unplug them, so that would be impossible. But McDonald's stands by this claim that Kitsch is a dangerous device, and it's told every franchise of its restaurants around the country not to use Kitsch, which really decimated Kitsch's business, the very fast-growing, otherwise, business of this tiny startup.
Wow, fascinating. So I want to take a step back from this conversation about just McDonald's and Taylor. We've heard a lot in recent years, in Illinois especially, about the right to repair movement. You know, there are a lot of farmers who talk about John Deere, which is another Illinois-based company. They want to be able to access the software and their farm implements, as one example. People also talk about this with regards to Apple and iPhones and things like that. Is this a right to repair issue, or does this go beyond that?
I do think that this is a right to repair story, you know, but if you look at, like, if you compare it, for instance, to Apple, which really locks down its computers and makes it very difficult to hack them, either yourself or for, like, cyber criminal or, you know, malicious hackers, an iPhone is a super lockdown device that's very hard to customize. We, you know, used to be that people jailbroke their iPhones. That's gotten harder and harder. But the reward, though, for that lockdown device is that iPhones work really well. You know, they can't be hacked by, you know, either good hackers or bad hackers, but they work, like, 99.9% of the time. They're extremely, like, easy to use devices and very dependable. What we're looking at here is a device that is locked down, that you know, Taylor is trying to prevent people from hacking to make it better, and that in its kind of default state doesn't work, like it's broken, you know, one out of nine times nationwide. You know, that is an abysmal kind of failure rate. And so I think it's a different kind of right to repair story. I mean, we don't see John Deere tractors or Apple, you know, iPhones breaking in that way. And so it's almost like a kind of like extreme right to repair example.
Andy Greenberg is a senior writer for Wired. He's also the author of Sandworm, A New Era of Cyber War, and The Hunt for the Kremlin's Most Dangerous Hackers. Andy, thanks so much for being with us today on the 21st.
Thank you, Brian. Thank you for having me. Ice cream, chillin', chillin', ice cream, chillin'.
Ice cream, chillin', chillin', ice cream, chillin'. We need to take a break, but before we do, I want to mention this Thursday, we're going to be taking the 21st on the road. It's our first remote show since the pandemic. We'll be broadcasting live at 11 a.m. from the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library and Museum in Springfield. We're planning to bring you a conversation with the museum's new director. Plus, we'll take a guided tour of the new temporary exhibit called State of Sound, which showcases artifacts from the history of music in Illinois, from Cheap Trick to Chance the Rapper. Before we go, I also want to mention this would be a great time to subscribe to our podcast. We've had a number of interesting conversations in the past few weeks from House Majority Leader Greg Harris, who's one of the few both openly gay and openly HIV positive legislators in the country, about the remarkable changes he's seen. He was born in 1955 and lived through everything from criminality in the closet through same-sex marriage equality, which he helped bring about in Illinois. Plus, another conversation with Elizabeth Hinton, the author of America on Fire, about the history of Black Rebellion. And there's a lot in that conversation specifically about Illinois in the 1960s and the way many historians and people have referred to as rioting in urban communities is better thought of as rebellion. Those conversations both happened last week. You can find them now on our podcast stream. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, NPR One, just about anywhere you get your podcasts. You can also find links to that at 21stshow.org. More to come after a short break. You're listening to The 21st. Stay with us.